Blog Talk Radio.
Housing is a luxury, a right, and a privilege. At least in this country it is. But what happens when the chips are down, the job gets cut, the money gets short? Is housing guaranteed at the point, or is it a risk to those who need it the most? Today, we're talking about fair housing, not just here in the greater Boston area, but its implications around the United States. And afterward, we'll have a special tribute to the late Dr. Dorothy Height. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Welcome, everyone. We're so glad that you're with us. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and I'm excited about the show today. We're going to talk about fair housing in just a few minutes with an expert in the area, and then we're going to pay a very special tribute to a woman who passed away at the age of 98 earlier this week, Dr. Dorothy Height. We have some special guests with us who are going to pay a special tribute to her, and if you haven't heard about Dr. Height, you'll want to listen to this show because she was a remarkable woman all the way up to the very end of her life. But before we do that, I want to just encourage everyone to check out the upcoming May 6th Empowerment Recognition Breakfast. I'm very excited about those who are going to be there. The people who we are going to honor, we're going to honor Mona Lisa Smith, who is the Vice President and Director of Community Investments at Citizens Bank, just a wonderful friend to many of us here in the social entrepreneur community nonprofit arena. Also, Rafael Torres, who is the only Hispanic owner of a multilingual destination tour company in Greater Boston. And you may not think that's a big deal, but it's a big deal to get that kind of license and keep that license and then operate your own business for 20 years. So you'll want to come to the breakfast and pay tribute to him, as well as Reverend Chin M. Tan, who is the executive director for the Mayor's Office of New Bostonian. She's a wonderful woman. She does an awful lot for the immigrant community. And this city is very multilingual, and so we're going to have a great time at the upcoming breakfast, Empowerment Recognition Breakfast. This is the 18th breakfast that we've had. We've been running them since the year 2000. It's going to be at the Seaport Hotel from 8 a.m. until 10. Networking starts at 7:30, and you can get your tickets online at www.msssconnect.com. That's www.msssconnect.com. Feel free to give me a call at 508-947-5755. We had a wonderful webinar yesterday connecting people literally on three continents. My guest was Garth Dallas, who is in Liverpool, England. We had a great group that participated on the England side, and we had our members here in the United States, and then others who are just really following what we're doing literally on three continents. So you want to find out more about the Multicultural Symposium Series and how you can become a member and just participate in all of the activities that focus on multiculturalism and greater and global diversity. So go to that website, www.msssconnect.com, and you'll find out all about it. Well, we have a very special guest who's going to talk to us about fair housing and also wants to announce a very special event that's taking place a week from tomorrow. That's Friday, April 30th, and we'll hear more about it from the executive director of the Boston Fair Housing Center, Tracy Brown. Hello, Tracy. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Carol. Thanks for having me. How are you today?
I'm doing great. I know you're just busy as a beaver getting ready for your event next week, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, along with all your other job responsibilities.
That sounds great. We're excited, and yes, we are very busy here at the Fair Housing Center of Greater Boston.
You know, I know that we're going to specifically talk about Boston, but I have people literally around the country and outside of the country who listen to this show. So the implications of what we're going to discuss really are far-reaching, well beyond the greater Boston area. You know, we take housing for granted. I take housing for granted all the time, but there are a lot of people who don't have homes or they're in situations where the housing conditions are not, quote, fair, unquote. So give us a basic definition. What is fair housing?
Simply put, fair housing is the protection of rights to equal housing opportunity for all. And the Fair Housing Act of 1968 prohibits discrimination in selling, renting, financing, and advertising of housing.
Well, yeah, I've worked with real estate companies. I've worked with a fairly large real estate organization some years ago, and I'll tell my listeners why. Again, for some, this may be new territory, and others, it's just something that reoccurs all the time. Several years ago, when I was going through a transition, and I was moving from one home to another, I was shopping around like crazy in that community and went back and forth to different sectors and different places. In one instance, I took my children with me to this one place that I was checking out. I had three children at that time. We had just come from church, so we were all pretty much dressed up, and I'm just going in there like I think I know everything. The seller just pretty much told me, you know, what was in the house, what was going to be available, what the price was. And she took one look at me and my kids, and she asked me this question, Tracy. She said, "Are you on Section 8? And my kids at that point looked up to me, and they said, "Mom, what is Section 8? So I had to explain to them what it was and then diffuse my anger because of that seller's assumption that because I had kids and I at that point was viewing the house by myself, then I was on Section 8. Do you get that all the time? And how do you respond? How would someone, a renter or someone who is looking to get another place, respond to an owner who assumes and makes that kind of assumption?
Well, you know, what you just mentioned is not uncommon at all, Carol. Based on how she approached you and what you said, it truly could be a form of what we call source of income discrimination, which is prohibited on the state level mass law against discrimination. And we do get a lot of that, individuals who do not want to rent to individuals because they have Section 8 vouchers, and that is illegal. Mm-hmm. So if that was the direction that she was going, that not only is that illegal, but we want to let the listeners know that that they have a place to come to if they are subjected to that kind of discrimination. Mm. They can come to the Fair Housing Center. We will take their complaint, file it with the necessary government agency, and serve as case advocates from the beginning and end to that complaint. But it is very, very common, not only here in the greater Boston area, but as you mentioned early on when you started, it is very common across the country as well. Many state anti-discrimination laws also include people discriminating against individuals based on their source of income is discrimination in housing.
And I mentioned that because, you know, again, I thought to myself, I said at that point, yeah, I had three children, but I had a master's degree. I was, you know, pretty well educated. I was gainfully employed as an entrepreneur, but yet I was subjected to that kind of questioning because of the color of my skin. And I guess the next question, and I'm so glad that you have invited listeners, if something like that happens to them, to visit the Fair Housing Center in Boston or wherever you happen to be, because so often people are ill-equipped to respond to that kind of questioning and not realizing that it's probably borderline illegal.
Well, and you're absolutely correct. And not only for your listeners who are in the greater Boston area, but know that they can contact any U.S. Department of Housing and Development HUD office in any of the 10 regions and file a complaint based on that issue. Moreover, there are fair housing centers all over the country that are equipped to advocate for individuals who believe they have been discriminated against. We are part of a much larger alliance of fair housing centers through the National Fair Housing Alliance out of Washington, D.C. And Shauna Smith is the president of that National Fair Housing Alliance. And all of us advocate and legislate on behalf of strengthening any of the fair housing law. So for your view, you know, your listeners who are not just in Massachusetts and they're in Washington State, they're in California, they have a couple of options, U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, the Fair Housing and Equal Opportunity Centers, mm-hmm. and or Fair Housing Center in their locale.
And let's just switch gears and talk about another pet peeve of mine when people are looking for homes or if they're looking to sell their homes. And I watch all the home shows. I watch the homes that are fixed up and all that jazz. And I find it intriguing in this day and time that so often people of color have to neutralize their homes in order to sell them. They have to take their pictures off the wall. They have to take anything that is ethnically focused for fear that that home won't sell because someone will walk in, will identify with a person of color, will walk out and not place a bid on the house. Is that a problem? Have we gotten beyond that point, Tracy Brown?
No, we have not gotten beyond that point, sadly to say. This is 2010, and we still, individuals, especially people of color, still suffer from housing discrimination in sales, either trying to attempt to purchase a home and or trying to sell their home. And it's unfortunate that individuals have to go to those lengths, and in many cases also have to get someone other than the color of their skin to sell their home in order to sell it.
Mm.
And it's all too often that does happen, and unfortunately, it's still happening present day.
That's deep. You have to have somebody else to come in and pose as the owner to sell your house. That is too deep. Wow, really deep. And I know that you have a big event coming up. I'm going to talk to you about that in just a few minutes. But tell us about your role, Tracy. I know that you've had a wonderful career path. You started off on the West Coast in the Seattle area, and now you ended up in Boston. We're so glad that you're here in Boston. What are you seeing in terms of patterns, of issues that people face since you hail from the West Coast, but now you're here on the East Coast? If there's something that would just stick out in your mind, what is it in terms of housing issues?
Well, what stuck out in my mind is the ongoing percentages of housing discrimination.
Hmm.
Part of one of the programs that we have here is a testing program in which we literally use a control method of documenting variations of treatment of home seekers
mm-hmm.
by housing providers to provide a credible picture of whether or not discrimination exists.
Okay, so these are testers?
And
Okay.
Yeah, these are testers that we send out to determine whether or not there's discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
What continues to surprise me is that in the greater Boston area, let me tell you what these numbers are. Roughly 50% of the time in attempts for rent, purchase, or financing of homes, African Americans and Latinos experience discrimination 50%.
Mm, wow.
About half of the time.
What happened to me almost 20 years ago is still going on. That's a little discouraging. That's a little discouraging. And
right.
We're not just talking about Boston, but, I mean, you're giving a stats on Boston. This happens everywhere. I remember, again, maybe 20 years ago, I used this in some of the training that I was doing. They would send testers around in St. Louis. In fact, this was an ABC feature. And the white tester would be treated one way. The black tester would be treated another way. They were equal in everything, their status in this company they were working for. Everything was equal, but the treatment was very different. And, you know, Tracy, this is such an important conversation. I know I'm going to have you back on because it's so important, because it gets to the point of the social dynamics that cripple multiculturalism and diversity issues, where somebody can be very proactive and a real advocate on the job, but boy, this housing situation and follow-up home completely different. So share with us other information about your job and what you're seeing in terms of persistent patterns.
Well, the persistent pattern, what we're continuing to see in terms of the form of what discrimination takes, again, primarily with African Americans and Latinos, 50% of the time, they're shown fewer homes and they are told about fewer listings. They're asked more questions about their qualifications. They're steered to other communities to lower-priced homes or to other open houses. Many times, if they're put off for 24 to 48 hours before viewing to discourage them, and they're quoted higher loan rates and offered fewer discounts on closing costs. And this is not just in Boston. This is across the country that there is still this level of discrimination. And in addition, what we're also seeing by what our white testers are coming back and saying, if it's based on race and white and black are what we are testing for, is many of our white testers come back and say that they have advantages, and they use the term we have advantages based on our whiteness.
Mm.
And that white testers are presumed more qualified, that they have greater access to property, they're given more information, they're quoted lower loan rates, better discounts, and that they're more likely to succeed in home buying.
Ooh, I'm just sitting here and saying, oh my goodness, I thought we had made a little bit more progress, but I see we still have a long way to go. We're going to get back to this information in just a few minutes. I just want to make sure we cover the big event that you have next Friday, April 30th, at the Seaport Hotel from 5 until 8. This is the 12th annual Fair Housing Month Celebration Open Doors Award Ceremony and Capacity Learning Session. And the keynote speaker is the Deputy HUD Secretary Ron Sims, coming from Washington, D.C. Tell us all about that, Tracy.
Yes, the Fair Housing Center has been around since 1998, and since the inception, they've been having these annual Fair Housing celebrations to not only to recognize individuals based on their tireless efforts to promote equal housing opportunities and open communities throughout the greater Boston area, but in addition to that, they'd like to bring a keynote speaker to come in and talk about fair housing issues and policies and concerns that are impacting fair housing. Deputy HUD Secretary Ron Sims, as you know, is from the Seattle area. He's the King County Executive there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was his Civil Rights Commissioner when I worked in Seattle.
Oh, my goodness. Let's see the connection. I love it.
Yeah. It is absolutely wonderful. We are so proud of him and such a supporter of him. And when we heard that he'd got, you know, the nod to be part of the President Barack Obama's cabinet and then was confirmed, we rejoiced.
Right.
And couldn't have been a better choice because he feels very passionately about diversity, equity, and inclusion of all the equal opportunity and civil rights areas, but especially fair housing and building strong and sustainable and inclusive communities.
Hmm.
So on Friday, April 30th from 5 to 8 o'clock, we're going to have an open reception of jazz. Elaine Trotman is going to be there, hors d'oeuvres, and a cocktail reception. Deputy HUD Secretary Sims will come on right about 6:15 and talk about fair housing and building strong, sustainable, and inclusive communities. There'll be a brief question and answer to follow that. So if you, any of your individuals who are listening are local and they have a burning question they want to ask the Deputy HUD Secretary, you need to be there that night and
right,
go ahead and write
right at the top. Yep.
That's right. And write that down. Thereafter, there's going to be the Open Door Award Ceremony where we are acknowledging local people in the greater Boston area, again, who have tirelessly efforted promoted equal housing. We've got Kathy Brown from the Boston Tenant Coalition. She's done a tremendous amount of work around fair and affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
The Chinese Progressive Association, who's trying to maintain affordable housing in the Chinatown area.
Mm-hmm.
City Life Vita Urbana. I'm sure you've heard about Steve Meacham and Melanie Griffith, who have tirelessly worked on this issue of predatory lending
mm-hmm.
and foreclosures, especially how they've disproportionately impacted African Americans and Latinos.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be honoring the late Senator Edward M. Kennedy,
and
there's going to be a special tribute for him.
Yeah.
Joseph Kennedy III will be accepting the award on behalf of the family.
That's great.
Henry Corman, who does a lot of fair housing, civil rights activist work. Jim Campen, one of our retiring board members. And Patricia Weems, who is with Mass Housing. So we are planning an extraordinary night. And for those individuals who know about the YWCA's Stand Against Racism, we are one of the participating sites, so if you want to come that night and also stand with us to sort of bring focus that racism still exists and want
right.
to support the Fair Housing Center and the YWCA, we're looking forward for you coming out then as well.
That's terrific. Wow. And this, now Patricia Weems, isn't she with the YWCA?
She's actually with Mass Fair Housing. She's her, the Director of Diversity over there, Carol.
Okay, Mass Fair Housing.
You haven't had a chance to meet her. You should definitely give her a call. She's an amazing woman.
Got to connect with her, definitely. I will be there. I'm going to be at this event. I definitely want to support it, and it's just so important. I mean, just not to network, but also to support what you're doing. And, again, just fair housing is just critical. So tell the listeners how they can get tickets. Give us your website so that they can connect with you and take it from there.
You can go on our website at www.bostonfairhousing.org. The individual tickets are $50. And if you want to sponsor the event and get an ad, you can also go on our website and also purchase an ad as well. Or you can contact our office at 617-399-0491, extension 105, and ask for Kamaria Carrington. That's 617-399-0491, extension 105. And just say that you want to support the Fair Housing Center of Greater Boston and Fair Housing in the Greater Boston area, and we will take good care of you and look forward to seeing you. But before you go, I did want to put in a plug for Boston because many individuals may or may not know Sandra Enriquez, who used to be with the Boston Fair Housing, is now the Assistant Secretary under Deputy HUD Secretary Ron Sims. So one of Boston's finest.
That's apparently right. Had
a great farewell and sending celebration off to Washington, D.C., and I had an opportunity to meet her in Washington, D.C.
And she's a great lady, I tell you. She was confirmed very quickly, just like Ron Sims was confirmed very quickly with the Senate hearings, and she's now working in his administration. And I'm so excited because my niece is her special assistant. She was working here in Boston with her for about 13 years, and now she's in Washington, D.C., working for HUD, working for the Obama administration. So, yep, hats off to both Sandra Enriquez and also Devon Bolton.
Oh, that's wonderful. So, you know, Greater Boston has to come out and support. And we know they will, but we are so proud that there are local Boston people that who care about this issue, passionate about this issue.
Yes.
And are in Washington, D.C. constantly on a daily basis fighting for the furtherance of civil rights for all.
Yeah, again, I just can't emphasize enough as I think about the work that you're doing with your staff, small staff. I'm sure your budget is quite tight like so many other important organizations like yours, but doing such important work because so often when people have issues or maybe they just want to do a little exploring, it doesn't have to be a bad situation. They want to come there and maybe to do some research or use your organization as a research base. The work that you do, I think, further chips away. If I were to use a quote from the late Benjamin Hooks, who I'm going to honor on a later program, he also passed away a couple of days ago, but he made a powerful statement. He said, yes, we've made progress in terms of diversity and multiculturalism, but it's just like chipping around the edges of darkness. And so often when you look at housing patterns of housing discrimination or issues where people say things and do things and they're not realizing that they're really doing things illegally, you need organizations like yours to set the record straight, probably to empower people to get on board and to understand their responsibilities as a tenant, as an owner, as a homeowner, as a community person. And again, housing, as I mentioned earlier, it's a luxury, it's a right, it's a privilege, and at least in this country it is, but it's just so important. So what's on the horizon for you, Tracy Brown, with the work that you're doing as the executive director of the Fair Housing Center of Greater Boston?
What's on the horizon for us, of course, is to continue the enforcement aspects of the work that we do in terms of complaint-based and looking for systemic acts of discrimination and to address those and to continue providing technical assistance to individuals and organizations who need to understand the roles and their responsibilities under the Fair Housing Act. Another thing I'd like to mention is that on the horizon is we're going to be we have a program called Race and Place Dialogues that we have been having in the greater Boston area for the last couple of years. And those Race and Place Dialogues are truly an opportunity for people to come together across races, ethnicities, and to talk about race issues so that we can create an open and welcoming community. There's a large migration of minorities from the urban core out to the suburban areas.
Right.
And we want to make sure that folks are welcome in those communities and when they get in those communities that, you know, everyone sort of promotes open, welcoming, and get along. And so we have started a series of race and place dialogues.
Are these dialogues, are they training centers, are training programs, are they focus groups? Give us a sense of what they actually are, Tracy.
They are like focus groups. Concerned citizens come together in their community. It could be their town administrator, and they identify maybe 30 or 50 people mm-hmm. who want to create a more open and welcoming community. And so we use the documentary that was done by the Ford Foundation called Race, the Power of Illusion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a 3-episode documentary that traces the historical creation of race as a social construct.
Mm.
Scholars and various backgrounds from anthropology, biology, and history, genetics, and the law talk about, you know, that, you know, how race was actually created over time.
Yeah.
And they talk about how it has been used to focus and shape our institutions.
Just talked about it with my British friends yesterday about race being a social construct. Yep.
That's correct.
Very
cool. So that's on the horizon.
Construct. That this is great. So this is something where, again, people can come and they can learn more about ways that they can be more proactive and more inclusive by participating with the race and place dialogues. I love that. What about somebody who wants to just come? Again, maybe they're being threatened with foreclosures. We haven't really talked a lot about that. I'm hoping that foreclosures in Massachusetts aren't as great as they are in places like Nevada or California. What can someone do who just wants to walk in your office or go to your website and find out maybe how they can hang on to their home? Let's ask that question.
What we'll do is for individuals that want to hang on to their home in terms of foreclosures, we will refer them to the Greater Boston Legal Services, GBLS. They do an outstanding job. Nadine Cohen over there handles the foreclosure department. She has an excellent track record in assisting individuals and keeping their homes. She also was one of the founding board members for the Fair Housing Center of Greater Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's very committed to fair housing and this whole issue around predatory lending and keeping as many individuals in their homes and keeping them from being foreclosed. So we have a very close relationship with the Greater Boston Legal Services, and they do an outstanding job, and we would refer them to them. If an individual believes that they are being discriminated against and subjected to predatory lending, then they would come to us, and we take the complaint, and we would investigate it.
So, again, people have places to go. There's a responsibility on the homeowner or the person who is having difficulties or the tenant or the landlord to do your own research. I think what you're saying, you're pointing people in the right direction. It's important to do the research. And, again, you can go to bostonfairhousing.org and find out information that will help you. You can also go to the HUD website. They have tons of information, and that's HUD, that's the Housing and Urban Development website, HUD.gov, and then govern yourself accordingly. And I want you to just come on out in big numbers and support this wonderful Open Doors Award ceremony that's going to be taking place on April 30th, put on by the Fair Housing Center of Greater Boston. And the guest speaker will be the Deputy HUD Secretary, Ron Sims, who used to work with, or should I say, Tracy Brown worked with him when they were out in Seattle. So the world gets really, really small. Tracy, anything else? And I thank you so much for being a guest on my program today.
The last parting thing that I'd probably want to say in addition to what you've already said is I'd love to come back on your show to talk about the issue around expiring use contracts. There's a lot of probably 30, 40, 50,000 affordable units that could be in jeopardy that could displace individuals to disperse them around the greater Boston area. And so let's talk a little bit about that and the impact that may have on the minority community mm-hmm. as a result of some possible loss of affordable housing.
Well, we will definitely have you back on there. Again, this is like it's like an onion. You just keep unraveling it, and it just goes on and on because there's so many issues, and this has everything to do with diversity inclusion and multiculturalism, and these are the hidden, undiscussable issues that just sort of evade us when we're doing the work that we are doing in terms of fairness and equality. Tracy Brown, I'll see you very shortly. Thank you so much for being a guest on my program today.
Thank you so much, Carol, and thank you for having me. I look forward to being on the show in the future.
All right, great. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Well, we move on, and we want to now pay a special tribute to a wonderful woman. I have guests who are lined up here, ready to go, and just excited about them. But I just want to do a special tribute of my own. I'm holding in my hand a book that was written by this woman who passed away earlier this week. I've met her several times. I've been in her company several times. I am a member of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority. Tracy Brown, who just left us, is also a member of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority. And we have other ladies who we're going to talk to who are members of the National Council of Negro Women, the Greater Boston Section. The founder is on with us. But I'm looking at this book right now, and it's called Open Wide the Freedom Gates. And I had the opportunity of purchasing it and getting it signed, and I look at the page that where Dr. Dorothy Height signed this book as a spry 90-year-old back in 2003. I purchased the book for myself and my daughter, who is also a Delta, and we both went up and met her and shook her hands, and she was just delightful. And I just want to play my theme music and then just play and just read just a little snippet from this book of this remarkable woman who just kept living until the very end. I'm reading from the memoir of Dorothy Height, and in Chapter 1, it's called A Little Old Lady, and she starts off saying, "I think of my life as a unity of circles. Some are concentric, others overlap, but they all connect in some way. Sometimes the connections don't happen for years, but when they do, I marvel. As in a shimmering kaleidoscope, familiar patterns keep unfolding. I was born in Richmond, Virginia on March 24, 1912, to Fanny Burroughs and James Height. My mother was over 40. I was, as they say, a second life baby, and so for me, she was never really young. Perhaps that is why I have always enjoyed being around older people. Even as a young child, I found it interesting to talk with them, and they seemed to enjoy me. They took me seriously because I took life seriously. I was shy, and I loved to get off by myself to read. I never enjoyed doing nothing. I always liked to challenge. If I was jumping rope, I wanted to go on to double dutch. My older sisters explained to me by saying I was an old folks' child." Now, that's how we begin the book of Dr. Height, and again, she just passed away just a few days ago, and I wanted to make a point to pay tribute, the kind of tribute to her that she so richly deserved. For many years, she headed the National Council of Negro Women that had been started years before. And then she was, before that period of time, was the president of the Delta Sigma Theta sorority, my sorority. But she was also a visionary, a civil rights leader, and a lady who wore very elegant, elegant hats. I heard an interview that even in her hospital bed, she wanted to make sure her makeup was right and she was just looking good. My mother did that kind of thing. My mother was that kind of woman. So I look up to a woman like her, not because of her elegance, but because of what she did. And on the phone with me, I have the founder of the Greater Boston Section of the National Council of Negro Women, Carolyn Gray, and also the Social Action Chair for Delta Sigma Theta Boston Alumni Chapter, Nancy Thompson. Hello, Carolyn and Nancy. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Carol. That was a wonderful opening. I have the book right with me as well as you were reading it.
Yes. She's just, you just want to just curl up and read it again and just take it all in. Carolyn, I wanted to ask you, what was the impetus for you starting a chapter of this organization based in Washington, D.C., called the National Council of Negro Women? Carolyn Gray, why?
Well, I
was volunteering with a lady, Dr. Pearson, Esther Pearson, who was starting a program down in Boston called, and she wanted to name it the Mary McLeod Bethune Institute. So she called Bethune-Cookman College down in Daytona Beach, Florida, to ask to get permission to use that name. And they said, fine, that sounds wonderful. Why don't you start a chapter of the National Council of Negro Women also? So she told that to me. I haven't been a member of the National Council of Negro Women. At that time, the chapter I belonged to was mostly older women, and like Dorothy Height, I always liked being around older people.
Yes.
And so that was the beginning of the Greater Boston section.
Wow. I mean, it's a lot to start an organization, start an affiliate group or a chapter of a major national organization, so I can imagine what it was like. And when was that? When did you start the GBS?
It was, we got our charter in January of 1992.
Ooh, wow.
And it all went very well, Carolyn. People were so cooperative.
Yes.
And it went very smoothly, and it went very well. And it has lasted, these 18 years?
Right, right.
It's still going strong, thank goodness.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are doing such great work. I have the privilege of emceeing your latest event that took place in March. And just the precision, the care, and the love that goes into the work that you do, the fundraising that goes on, and all the women who are participating, and men, too. So it's not just women who are part of your organization, men as well.
Yes, associate members, men are.
That's terrific. Nancy Thompson, let's just sort of switch gears. And again, Dr. Height was both a Delta and a leader in NCNW. You had the privilege of seeing her up close and personal last year when last year was the last Delta legislative conference that she attended in March of 2009. What was that experience for you?
Well, I'll tell you, our Delta, as it's called, Delta Days in the Nation's Capital, which is a yearly event, that was my first attendance at that. And there were so many firsts for me at that particular conference. And meeting Dr. Height was really the highlight of it, because she was there. We were at the nation's capital. There was an unveiling of a portrait of another Sora of ours, Shirley Chisholm.
Yes.
And it was an unveiling. She was right there up front, ready and there to celebrate yet another trailblazer, which Dr. Height was. And so I went right up to her. She was, of course, in another elegant hat. And there she was, appropriately honored, and people were coming up and speaking to her. And I was so happy to be there in her presence, and you could feel it from her. She doesn't really have to say a word to you, but you can feel it from her, her strength, her power, her determination, all of that. And she was there. You're right to say she did everything right up to the end.
Yeah.
And that was my sense of her at that time. I was very fortunate to be able to greet her and say hello.
She had quiet elegance, and I'm grateful that I take a lot of pictures, and people sometimes say, oh, you're always taking pictures, but I'm now glad that I'm taking pictures. I had Sandy Middlebrooks on my show a couple of weeks ago. He's a wonderful photographer here in Greater Boston, and he impressed upon the listeners just the importance of just snapping up pictures and taking pictures, because you don't know when they're going to be of value to you, not just from a monetary point of view, but just from a point of view of value and heritage and just reflections. And certainly the pictures I have of Dorothy Height, the picture I used in my promotional materials here on Blog Talk and elsewhere, I'm just grateful. I mean, she was a queenly woman. You see her in this picture at 97 years old, and she's got this wonderful big hat on. Her makeup is on. I mean, right up to the end, what a role model. And Carolyn Gray, talk to us about the importance of her in NCNW, but just as a woman, really leading the way for younger women to follow.
Well, she was an extraordinary woman. She had strong leadership skills. She was organized and a visionary.
Mm-hmm.
She was calm. And she knew how to preserve her energy. She took power naps.
I like
and,
that.
And she taught a lot of the civil rights guys how to preserve their energy and to power nap.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if too many people know about that.
That's new information.
I had the great privilege once, back in 1994, to travel with an American delegation to the International Council on Population and Development in Cairo, Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Haight was there. She traveled with, we all traveled together, and for 7 or 10 days or so, you know, and I sort of got to see her a little bit close up.
Yeah, how was that?
And it was wonderful.
Ah.
She is just the person that you, she's that way all the time, the way that you see her. She's calm.
Mm-hmm.
She tells great stories. She has a really nice singing voice,
oh,
too.
Oh, my goodness.
and of course, she had style.
Yeah,
you know,
oh, boy,
she liked to look nice.
Yes, all the time.
And beautiful hats and shoes.
Yes, yes.
She liked shoes, too.
You know, if I can also comment
yes,
as well,
Nancy,
just in terms of this is something that was always, I think, just a part of her. And we talk a lot about DNA, but it's probably part of her as, you know, as she grew up. Because even, and I'm going again back to the book that you had referenced, Carol, and there is a section in there about Dorothy Hyde as she, just before the coming of age chapter, and as a teenager, even some of her friends wrote in her yearbook, and it's a quote in the book and says, in every class there is one apart, a student of great renown, and Dorothy here has a wonderful start to win an orator's crown. And, I mean, her teenage friends recognized that her way back then. And it's just something that, you know, when you're in front of someone who is, you know, unique like that, it's something that doesn't happen overnight. It's something that was there a long time ago, and it just was nurtured. And she even references our sorority, Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated, in another chapter where she talks about it as a place where a place where she nurtured her leadership skills.
Right. Exactly.
In that there is a chapter where she talks about it, I think around page 249 in that book tells us about how getting the leadership, being able to practice her leadership skills in the sorority. And then being able to go out to new ventures of it. And that's really who she was.
She
in a Sicily arena that tested and nurtured my leadership capabilities. And then she goes on to even talk about even a greater thirst for knowledge and for new ventures to be of service to others.
So she literally started off, clearly this was part of her DNA, part of her characteristics, and it was you used the right word, Nancy. It was nurtured throughout the years, so much so that at the end, you know, we look back on her life, never heard of any scandals about her. She was right there on the stage in 1963 during the March on Washington with Dr. King. And the thing I wrote about earlier is that she was counsel. She was an advisor to all the presidents from the 50s through President Obama. I mean, that's just outstanding. Carolyn Gray, how do you see this? I mean, you're a leader. You started the Greater Boston section. What are your thoughts and reflections on someone like an elegant Dorothy Hyde who advised presidents?
I think it was a wonderful thing. She was a member of all kinds of boards and commissions on the national level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she also worked with the Secretary of State in a lot of instances. I mean, before the present one.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And she is a woman. I think when I think about her, and I have been doing that the last few days really a lot,
mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that she put purpose and action together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's a woman of purpose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she was always on committees to make things better for handicapped people and to make things better for women and families and community. and to make the black family a positive experience,
mm-hmm.
so that black families would look upon themselves in a very positive and useful and meaningful way, and which was the beginning of the family reunion that the National Council of Negro Women sponsored.
That's right.
In Washington every year, and I think I read just recently where she attended every one of them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So again, I mean, she's a trailblazer, and again, what stands out in my mind, this is a woman who never married. So she did not have the nuclear family experience that many of us have. And in some cases, people would say, you know, that's terrible, it's unfortunate. But it did not stop her from becoming the classic woman that she was, not only starting movements and starting commemorative days within NCNW, but continuing to participate in a very active role with on her boards that she sat on, and continuing to certainly be a very active player with Delta Sigma Theta. And the thing that gets me just really up and to salute her is the fact that here I'm in my mid-50s right now, 56. I still have, if I live that long, but regardless of how long I live, there's still so much more work to do. And the exciting thing about Dr. Height is that regardless of her health issues, and clearly she had to slow down and she had to stay in a wheelchair and stuff, but she kept going. She didn't stop. Nancy, what's the significance of that?
Well, it tells us that it's a lifelong experience. Once you know what it is that you're doing, it's something that continues on. And I think that's the biggest lesson to learn from her. At least that's what I take from her. That, you know, and I saw her and I said, she is still hot there. She is still right on the point. She is still going, and I said, that's going to be me when I grow up. You know, and I'm 60, and I'm still saying when I grow up. And that's part of it. It's something that goes on. I just was on the phone with my uncle, who is 99, 1 year older than Dorothy Height, and he's another guy that I consider, is, I look up to, because he continues. He has health issues as well, but he continues. And so, I mean, this is part of what we at least what I take from this.
Sure. I mean,
just continue on.
Yeah, I love what Carolyn, what you said, purpose and action. And I think about you, Nancy, you're a retired teacher, but my gosh, you're going great guns with social action and chairing that committee. Carolyn, what do you look at it from your personal perspective when you look at someone who clearly had purpose and she mixed it with action straight up to the end?
I can see her being a really great role model for me. I'm a retired school teacher as well.
All right.
And above all else, for people to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
And you think of Dr. Height and you think of other trailblazers. It is so important that we let her be a role model still, even now. With people and with their children, and to get involved, to just get involved in whatever things that concern you, positive things, and issues that you're concerned with, and get involved in those in a very meaningful and positive way, and let your children be involved in them with you.
Yeah. That's right.
You know, the one thing, Dr. Height was very passionate about children and about young people, and I can remember some of the comments that she would make about the importance of sort of setting the example for young people. How do you incorporate that, first Carolyn and then Nancy, how do you incorporate that in your respective organizations, her legacy and her the importance that she had toward young people and young adults and young girls?
Me first?
Yes, Carolyn. Yes, Carolyn. Mm-hmm.
Okay. In our organization, we are in line with the national organization, with the health care, with education, and with economic empowerment programs to make life easier for the children that are coming along.
Right.
And we in our activities, especially our fundraiser, the banquet that we have every year at the National Council of Negro Women, Greater Boston section, we always put in a page and dedicate that to Dr. Hite and to the National Council, to the national branch of the National Council of Negro Women. And also to just let people know that Dr. Hite worked very hard to get a national headquarters in Washington, D.C., and it is placed between, the site is between the White House and the Capitol building on Pennsylvania Avenue. And that's where the national headquarters is, and that is something to be very proud of.
Yes.
And that she worked very hard, not only for the building, but the programs that take place within that building to for entrepreneurship, for women in particular, and for all kinds of education and positive thinking and education and health issues goes on in there, training college students and excuse me, and other people with issues and concerns.
Right. So again,
she has done so much.
Yeah. So it was not just a house, it was not just a building, it was a place, again, where action and activities were going to be cultivated. And then I switched to Nancy Thompson. Our sorority is based in Washington, D.C. So talk to us about the legacy of Dr. Hite with some of the girls' programs that we have with Delta.
Well, our program, our current program that we're working with right now is called our Delta Gems program. And in that, we're mentoring through the generosity and the volunteership of many of our Delta sorors. We're mentoring young women from the ages of 14 to age 18. They are young women who have expressed an idea to work towards social action, to work on socially important issues, to learn more about issues relating to finance, education, health issues, and the like. And in that particular group, I think Dr. Hite would have been right in the middle of it, and the girls would have come around to her, and they would have listened to and held on to every word that that said, because that's how they gravitate towards us. And I think part of how she saw how the organization should run, because she was one of our leaders, she was one of our former presidents,
exactly.
So that her legacy continues on and comes through us. And this type of activity that we're doing, that we're engaged in right now, is something that she would have really approved and would have been very proud of, and would have really touted and lauded it.
And
so and it's a joy to work with these young women. And as they learn more, in fact, this weekend they're learning more about financing and how to plan and so forth. And these are things that Dr. Hite thought we should be doing. It was very important, very meritorious.
And again, her book from 2003, we're talking to Carolyn Gray, who was the founder of the Greater Boston section of the National Council of Negro Women, and also the social action chair for Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Boston Alumni Chapter, Nancy Thompson, both retired school teachers but still working away in their respective positions, leadership positions within their organizations. Reading from the very end of Open Wide, The Freedom Gates, the memoir by Dr. Hite, who we are paying tribute to today, she says, "For all our struggles for justice, there is still much work to be done. When Mrs. Bethune founded the National Council of Negro Women in 1935, she declared that Negro women, the trained and untrained alike, stand outside of America's mainstream of influence, opportunity, and power. This daughter of slave parents and advisor to four U.S. presidents called for women in all walks of life to join hands in service to themselves, their families, their nation, and their world. Mrs. Bethune knew that there would still be struggles in the 21st century, but she also knew that the inner power never ceases to flow." And I think the message there is that even though some people, again, not really knowing, because they're sort of looking at their own preconceived notions, they'll look at the National Council of Negro Women, they'll look at Delta Sigma Theta, and they may just think of college girls, or they'll look at this organization, NCNW, just dealing with African-American women. That's not the case, because Dr. Young was inclusive. So she knew who she was, She was a proud heritage woman, but she used that to build bridges with women everywhere. Would you agree with that, Carolyn and Nancy?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, definitely. It was, again, part of who she was. And to reach out, and I think what she meant with new ventures had to do with exactly that, making those connections, making those collaborations, those areas where people were working together to achieve common goals. And I think definitely that was a big part of how she functioned.
So now
you know,
also
in that book, Open Wide as Freedom Gates, there was a piece in there about a program called Wednesday Morning that I was just so impressed with. It
Tell
was
us about
a,
that. Yes.
It back in the 60s, it was a program in Mississippi that she put together to that Dr. Haidt put together to call on Wednesday mornings all women together from all over the country, women of all cultures and backgrounds. And what they did was to get to know each other and to, above all else, understand each other better so that they could really understand what they were fighting for. Okay, so civil rights, if you may think, well, I don't like the idea of one person segregating against another person, but then if you really get to know that person, and you really get to understand what that person is all about and how they feel about certain about these issues, about civil rights and integration and segregation, then you can really fight harder with passion and with purpose, you know.
Sure.
And I like that part in the book about I was very impressed by that book and by all of the things that were an important part of her life, Dr. Haidt's life.
Sure. Sounds like we need to resume and bring back Wednesday mornings. That's a
sure.
very powerful concept.
Yeah, if I could,
so.
I could add, because I know we're getting close to the closing point. In terms of the book, Open Wide, The Freedom Gates, when I found out that Dr. Haidt was sick and we were all asked to, you know, send up our prayers and so on, during this past week, I happened to be reading the book as part of how I was gathering my thoughts to continue them or add these thoughts in my prayers, and I had the book out and I was reading from it, and that's when I heard about Dr. Haidt's passing.
My goodness.
And so, I mean, the book is going to keep, it's going to have a special place in my home, in my heart, and in my thoughts all the time, and I will refer to it often. So, and it's called Open Wide the Freedom Gates. It's her memoir, and you could feel her hand right there.
And I'm just so grateful that she touched and wrote in my book that will be cherished for a long time. We're saying this because we're living in a very loud world with a lot of people who are quite flamboyant and people who are doing things and being celebrated for things that just aren't really right, to be quite honest with you. Not ethical, not right, challenging, but yet they become celebrated. And then you look at the quiet, consistent work of Dr. Dorothy Haidt, and to me, this is the life worth living. This is the meaningful life that we need to constantly be focused on and realize that, yes, you may have others who will overshadow you, who will get the celebration that you never get, but still the work that you do is so very, very significant. I want to thank you, Nancy Thompson, for being a guest on my program.
It was my honor, I tell you, really my honor to call in on this program.
Thank you so much. Carolyn Gray, I do appreciate you for being on the program. And I just love you guys to pieces and just say continue in your age of retirement to realize that, you know, you still have another third plus to go. So
thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have to hang
very meaningful today.
Thank you very much. And again, this is just a reminder that we have to lift up women like Dr. Haidt, men like Reverend Ben Hooks, and so many others who are now just memories in our lives, that their lives were worth living. The struggles that they went through certainly are struggles that we have to remember so that we will not repeat them. And certainly, most importantly, when I look at someone like Dorothy Haidt, the message that she had for younger people, particularly younger women of all races, that the work still has to go forward, and we do what we do for all of them. Thank you all so much. We'll see you next week, and just keep smiling, be empowered, and we will talk to you next week. This is Carol Copeland Thomas signing off for Focus on Empowerment.